You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Jones, Bowden, he's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello, welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket on the first day of the Test match summer. England against Ireland, and I suppose it's gone as predicted, really. Well, actually, Ireland made a decent fist of the score in the end after losing their first three wickets for 19. I've had an interesting social day, actually, watching it from various different aspects and with various different people. I'll tell you about that. But in reply to Ireland's 172, England almost, as Simon Mann predicted, are on a par with them, having lost just one wicket for 152. What did you make of it?
Well, yeah, I did. I sent you a message, didn't I, about 3 o'clock. You didn't reply to it because you were probably socialising, in inverted commas. But I did say England to be ahead by the close of play. And I think they would have been if they bowl all the overs. We were six overs short. I made it on the day's play. So a bit skinny, but plenty of action. 11 wickets, stacks of runs, and a totally dominating a performance from England. I mean, they didn't have to try hard to score at seven and over. This wasn't sort of baseball cricket. It was putting away the bad balls, and there were plenty of them from the Ireland bowlers. I have to say, when I saw the toss at 10:30 this morning, I saw the weather, I thought this game, three innings match, 3 days, and actually nothing that's happened today has changed my feelings on that. I mean, interesting to see how England approach it tomorrow. I mean, it's possible they might, you know, they might declare before the close of play and try to put some pressure on Ireland in the final session.
Yeah, I suppose so. But it's not that good a pitch to bowl on, I would say. So your fears that England were going to bowl Ireland out very cheaply, I think were slightly misplaced if that's what you thought might happen. Actually, it's a flat pitch. I reckon England could get 500. In fact, I said that we had a little reunion of our world's best cricket club members around one of the statues at the back of the media centre at lunchtime today. And I said, when the score at the time was 70 for four or something like that, I said, I reckon England could get 500 eventually in the game. And they were going, really? But I just think it's a lovely pitch to bat on, actually. And Ireland just haven't, as we predicted in our preview podcast, just Ireland haven't really got the bowlers to stop England in their tracks.
Oh, no, I agree. England could get 500 if they want to, if they need to. It might be they just, you know, the way
pull
they
out
play.
Earlier.
Well, just pull out earlier and put some pressure on in the last hour. Who knows if Ben Stokes, you don't know what's going to happen. They could be bowled out for 250 tomorrow, smacking it up in the air. But, I mean, the way they play, they play with such ease. I thought Duckett actually was really impressive, hit the ball nicely, sweetly. I mean, there were a lot of decent four balls to knock away. Crawley had a lot of luck. I mean, there was a lot of inside edges, weren't there, past the stumps down towards the fine leg boundary. And perversely, of course, the one he was out to, he actually hit pretty much in the middle, but back to the bowler Hand, who went for it two hands and caught it one hand. There we go.
You'd have loved that. First test You'd have loved that on commentary, wouldn't you? Using all those expressions. It's funny, actually. Crawley annoys me a bit because I think he was trying to manufacture stuff today. And, you know, he's almost got sort of Baz Ball stuck in his head too much. He doesn't need to try too hard to score fluently. As you said, actually, England didn't really try that hard. But there were times when he stepped up the pitch, went across to off stump, tried to sort of flick a ball outside off through mid-wicket, got an inside edge, as you mentioned, flicked away for four down to fine leg. I don't think he needs to do that. There was the shot of the day, for me, was a shot, I think he might have got to 50 or just before he got to 50. Shortish length of the length from the nursery end, good pace, but nothing special about the ball, but not a four ball by any means. And he just caressed it through the covers for four, sort of almost on the up. And that was him being, you know, Zach Crawley rather than trying to be something else. Just being playing his natural game rather than trying to be too funky, if you like. And I prefer that. I think he doesn't, you know, he doesn't need to try too hard, really.
Yeah, some of those ones that went off the inside edge, he looked to me as if he was trying to hit the ball too hard, trying to smash it rather than caress it. I agree with that. Although he got his 50 quicker than Ben Duckett. I mean, 39 balls to Crawley's 50 and 53 balls from Ben Duckett. It must be quite difficult to bowl at them, mustn't it? Because Duckett, we've made this point before, haven't we? We've got a short left-hander and a tall right-hander. If you're rotating the strike, I mean, how annoying is that as a new ball or pace bowler or even a spinner as well?
Well, it's very annoying. I mean, the slope comes to your aid a little bit because you can use that to your advantage. You can pretty much bowl the same line to both batters and left-hand and right-hand, and the ball will behave, you know, slightly differently to them because of the advantage of the slope. But you have to adjust a little bit, you know, certainly if the ball gets older. And actually, the nice thing about Crawley and Duckett as well is that they do complement each other well, not just with the left and right hand, but also Duckett kind of sort of stepping back onto his stumps, playing from the crease a lot of the time, looking to hit those slightly short balls powerfully square of the wicket. And he did so very effectively, a couple of really rasping pull shots. And Crawley, although he doesn't make a big stride forward, he does look to hit off the front foot more. So you've got to kind of counter your lengths as a bowler as a result. And I feel sorry for Ireland, really, because they're trying to play a test match here at Lord's. They've had very little first-class cricket. They've had very little red ball cricket. Not only in this summer, but generally in their lives. If you look at some of those players, they've only played 18 first-class games or something like that in their career, never mind only three test matches or something that, you know, in the last few months. So it's tough. I mean, someone like, you know, I feel, you know, sorry for the batters. Someone like Andy Bilburney, who's, you know, their best player, didn't get a proper bat against Essex in the warm-up game because the openers piled on a double century partnership in the second innings, and they failed. The numbers three and four, their main players, failed in the first innings. So, you know, they just haven't had much cricket. So actually, in a way, I'm surprised they got as many as 174.
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy for them. It really isn't. I mean, and the other thing as well I noticed today is the players they came up against in the England side today, the bowlers, and the two batters, well, three batters actually, have actually had quite a lot of cricket this season. We've talked about some of the England players who haven't had much cricket. You think of Stokes and Root and Brook, you know, very little cricket, and Bairstow as well. But they didn't really feature very much today. It, you know, when England batted, it was Crawley, who's played a lot this summer, Duckett, who's had a lot of innings this summer, and Pope, who's had a lot of innings this summer and played nicely. And the bowlers, of course, Tongue and Leach and Broad and Potts have all been playing quite a lot of county cricket. So, you know, there's that as well. You know, they didn't come up against, if you like, some of the England players who were underprepared. England didn't really need them today. Just going back to your point about, you know, I thought Ireland would bowl out cheaply. Well, I think they were bowled out relatively cheaply, 170. I didn't think they were going to be bowled out for 50 or anything like that, although at 19 for 3 and then suddenly potentially 19 for 4 when that LBW was given, you thought, well, hold on, it could go horribly wrong for them here. But the thing is, I thought, you know, yeah, something like 150, 200, something like that. But England score so quickly, and it is such a good surface, that, you know, you would back them to get up around Ireland's total by the close of play, which is actually what happened, and then just, you know, press on tomorrow. I mean, you could see England, you know, 250 ahead, and then potentially pulling out and then having a go. But I agree with you. It looks like quite a good Lord's pitch, doesn't it, in the conditions? Apart from this morning when it was a bit overcast and a bit cold, conditions were batting pretty good. And you think you can make a fist of it. Whether you can make a fist of it if you're, 250, 300 runs behind on first innings, that's another matter, isn't it? I mean, it does have the feel of a three-day game. If Ireland take this to a fourth day, I think they'll have done pretty well, actually. It will show they batted well in their second innings. And they have got some players who can score, haven't they? The likes of Balbirnie and Sterling and Kampfer. I thought, Kampfer played pretty well today. But he just charged down the wicket. He didn't trust his partner at the other end, didn't he, with wickets falling towards the end of the innings. And this is a guy who's made runs against England one-day cricket's first two one-dayers against England, made 59 not out and 68 at Southampton in 2020. And he also scored 100 in his last test match as well against Sri Lanka. I thought he looked quite well organised. And, England were struggling to get him out, but in a way, he got himself out.
Yeah, they went on with the bouncer tactics in the end, didn't they? And
what did you think of that? What did you think of that, Jos? Going quite quickly and asking Tongue to do it as well. Yes, Josh Tongue, in his first test match, it felt like a bit of an experiment. Can you do this? Can you bowl sustained short bowling?
I think that was exactly what it was. I think that's exactly what it was. He started out, Josh Tongue, he took over from Stuart Broad at the Pavilion end and bowled a decent first spell, was unlucky not to take his first test wicket. Got the speed up pretty well, kept an excellent line and hardly gave any easy runs away, but was probing away. But then actually, the fact that they tried him round the wicket with the sort of body line tactics, with men on the hook and so on, I'm sure it was an experiment, because I think they see him as someone. It reminded me actually a little bit of the way Liam Plunkett was used, say, 10 years ago or so in Test cricket, as the sort of enforcer, as the plan C, if you like, after the first two plans haven't quite worked, or to rough up the tail, or one or two of those sort of strategies. And I think he's got the makings of doing it well, because he's strong, he's tall, he gets the ball up from not that short. He's tall and got speed up to, actually, I think he got one up to 89.9 miles per hour, so pretty good. And he gets the ball up into the ribs from an awkward length. And then it's one of those, how do you play it? Do you fend it off? Do you weave? Do you try and hook it? And I think a valid exercise that, because if Stokes, who's tended to be the person that England use to do that in the last year or so, isn't able to, then Tongue, and obviously Jofra Archer's out of the equation, Mark Wood may or may not play all tests. So you've got Tongue there as another option, and I think he did it quite pretty well.
Yeah, so they were sort of having a look at him to see whether he was capable of doing that. What do you think about his action and the way he bowls? He's quite open chested, isn't he? His right leg sort of splays out to the right hand side. It's not sort of when you just freeze him. He's not like a sort of classic looking bowler with his action.
Well, he's had to adjust, hasn't he? Because he's had a number of injuries, and sometimes you don't necessarily finish up bowling as you did when you were younger, because your body tells you can't. It looks a bit awkward, but I don't mind that if he can stay fit. I mean, obviously this is the big if he can stay fit. I think he's got quite an interesting action, because it's a bit Courtney Walsh like. It's slightly open chested. He angles it in, but he can get it to sort of move away as well. And he's quite close to the stumps, actually. So it's deceptive, because sometimes you see those bowlers who are open-chested and you think, oh, they're wide of the crease, I can hit everything through the leg side. But actually, he's quite tight in on the stumps and bowls quite wicket to wicket. So, yeah, I thought it was a decent effort, actually, but from him today. Unlucky not to take his first wicket.
Well, it's a strange sort of day for him, because he would have been elated, wouldn't he, to have played his first test match. And you're into the action quite quickly as well, because England won the toss. We ended up with 13 overs, 0-40, while the others clean things up. Stuart Broad taking 5, Jack Leach, who we'll talk about in a short while, taking 3, and Matthew Potts picking up a couple. So that's a bittersweet day, really. It was great to see him then on the outfield getting his cap from Jimmy Anderson. And the fact that his family were there as well, his partner and his son, I think it was, and his mum and dad, I think, were there with him. That's great, isn't it, actually? Because they are sort of part of your life as a cricketer. You know, you think, you know, partner definitely, and of course your parents as well, who sort of have to, I suppose, live through your growing up and trying to become successful, trying to become a test match cricketer. And also the other person who'd been very happy today was that guy who I think played with him, or was a bit older, played with him, who put £100 on him at the age of 11 to become a test cricketer. So he's still got the betting slip, so that would have earned him about £50,000 if the bookies pay up.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
We'll talk about the England bowlers in a sec. I just wanted to say one thing. It was that I watched part of the game today in the president's box, the new president of the MCC, who, of course, Stephen Fry. The only reason I was there, actually, was not because I was invited, but because my sister was in there, Bettany. Bettany Hughes, for those who like their history, is the history presenter. She is my sister, even though people find it hard to believe. She's got both the brains and the looks, which I obviously haven't. But anyway, she said, I'm here. And she hardly ever, she doesn't even know where Lord's is. And she was there sort of maybe a couple of times in my playing career, but that's about all. She was busy in some part of the Middle East recording some programme or other most of the time. So she invited me in, and who should I meet but one of Stephen Fry's pals, Tim Robbins, the famous Hollywood actor, star of the likes of The Shawshank Redemption, Bull Durham, what else, The Player, even Top Gun he was in, actually. So, you know, he's quite an established, you know, figure. Of course, he's never watched a game of cricket before. So I love this challenge, actually, of, you know, sitting with a Hollywood star, them trying to kind of fathom out what the hell cricket is. And, you know, the thing that interested him most was the roller that came on halfway through the game. Obviously to roll the pitch before England batted, and he'd never seen it, because of course, you know, coming from a baseball background, they don't roll the surface at all because the ball never has to pitch. And he was intrigued by the nature of having a big steamroller out there rolling the pitch. But anyway, he enjoyed himself, and he's going to pass on his best to all his Hollywood mates about cricket, and maybe support one of the American teams in the MLC that's to come, obviously not so long from now, the Major League Cricket tournament going on in the States.
How come he was there?
Mates of Stephen Fry.
Oh, right. So Stephen Fry invited him along and said, come along, watch a bit of cricket. Yeah. Okay. And so it was up to you to teach him about the game, was it?
Well, I was sort of explaining a few bits, and he was actually quite intrigued. He was really looking forward to England batting because, I mean, the Irish innings was a little bit sort of ponderous at times. But obviously, once England got to the wicket, it was a little bit more positive, and a few kind of resounding shots through the covers that woke him up from a sort of post-tea slumber. Anyway, you know, a good first day in the end, and particularly for Broad and Leach, who I think would have been very happy with their returns.
Yeah, Stuart Broad, 10 years since he's taken a fifer at Lord's. Another one, the 20th. Of his career. I wonder whether he'd gone straight back to the dressing room and, you know, put that sort of plaster up on the honours board and written his name up there, or, you know, whether he's past that now. He's done it, you know, done it before, and he's had so many fifers before. How did he look? Because he sort of, you always feel Stuart, he sort of eases himself into the Championship season, doesn't he? He doesn't sort of devastate. He doesn't seem to take many fifers for Nottinghamshire, but you know, you get him in an England shirt, and with perhaps with not something to prove, but you know, obviously he wants to play in the Ashes this summer. He wants to play a certain amount of the games. You know, comes up with fifer. Bowling at 81 miles an hour, 81, 82
yeah,
miles an hour.
That's all right. I mean, you know, it doesn't need to be that much quicker. I think he revels in the responsibility, just the occasional time when Jimmy, his mate, isn't playing, and he takes on the responsibility of opening the bowling, bowling the first over, which, I mean, is a responsibility. That obviously, it's an important sort of tone setter for the innings and so on. And also, he gets the choice of ends as well. And every bowler, every fast bowler likes to bowl pavilion end at Lord's because...
Why?
Well, it's because, firstly, the slope brings the ball back into the stumps if you're bowling to a right-hander, bringing LBW and bowled very much into the equation. It tends to be harder to get wickets bowled or LBW from the nursery end because the ball naturally shapes a way down the slope towards the slips. And secondly, often it's with the wind as well. The prevailing wind at Lord's is usually from behind the pavilion, a sort of southwesterly, and so you're running sort of, you feel like you're running slightly downhill and with the wind, and that just always helps a fast bowler, especially if his legs are in their 35-year-old class.
Yeah, and the ridge, of course, doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
You remember, did you, the Lord's Ridge?
Yeah, that was a bit of a myth, I think. Yeah, there was a talk in the sort of 70s and 80s that there was this ridge from the pavilion end that made the ball bounce a little bit extra. My view, actually, if you really want the answer to that, is that it's to do with the slope. The slope actually goes from, if you're bowling from the pavilion end, the slope at Lord's goes from third man, sort of around about one of the Compton stand, down across the ground, diagonally, down to the bottom corner, which is the sort of tavern and the Allen stand to the one side of the pavilion. So it's a diagonal slope. And I think when you're bowling, especially up the sort of grandstand side of the square, there is a bit of a slope on the pitch which you're bowling into from that pavilion end. So I think that's why they used to get a bit of extra bounce from there, but it doesn't really exist now.
Okay, so more wickets for Stuart Broad today. And Jack Leach, here's something. Jack Leach used in the 12th over on an overcast morning when England have put the opposition into bat. Now, surely, if that had been an Ashes Test match, Jack Leach wouldn't have bowled there. Presumably, I know Ben Stokes, this feeling is Ben Stokes trusting, presumably that's where England would have needed their fourth seamer. That's when you absolutely want that fourth seamer, and Ben Stokes is not playing in this game.
Yeah, so what, you're saying that it's early for him to have a bowl, the 12th over?
Well, it is really.
Is quite
on an overcast
early
morning, you put the opposition into bat. I know sometimes you like to have a look with a spinner.
It wasn't a typical Lord's early morning pitch, though, because of the dry weather we've had recently. It was quite brown and sort of biscuit colour. And I didn't think it had that much in it for the seamers, actually. So it was perfectly worthwhile giving the spinner an early bowl.
Okay, so not much in it for the seamers. Perhaps Arden rather frittered their wickets away. They're one or two sort of poor strokes. Here's a question on Jack Leach, or two questions on Jack Leach. Has he been more successful under Ben Stokes or before Ben Stokes? And has he bowled more under Ben Stokes than before Ben Stokes? So two questions for you. Has he been more successful under Ben Stokes? Has he bowled more overs per test match under Ben Stokes? Answer the first question.
Has he been more successful? Yes. Has he bowled more overs than under Ben Stokes? Probably yes. What's the answer?
Okay. The answer to those two questions is right in one case, wrong in the other. He has not been more successful under Ben Stokes. He was more successful before Ben Stokes. He's taken 44 wickets at 37.04 under Stokes. Before that, he took 79 wickets at 31.88. In terms of bowling more, you have this feeling that he's bowled a lot more under Stokes and Stokes has trusted him more. Well, in actual fact, before Ben Stokes, He bowled 40 overs per test match. Under Ben Stokes, he's bowled 41.25 per test match. So he's bowled a little bit more under Ben Stokes, but very, very, you know, very, very marginal. And he actually had a little bit more success, strike rate a bit better before Stokes. Probably the difference is that Stokes brings him in earlier and he keeps the field up, doesn't he? That's the other thing. He keeps the field up.
He does. And I really like the way Stokes captains with Jack Leach. I mean, Stokes earned the first wicket that Leach took today, the LBW to Paul Sterling, by Sterling, an aggressive player, good player, looking to be positive, obviously, likes batting at Lords, having experienced it a lot with Middlesex. And he kept the deep square leg in the ring and the mid-wicket in the ring, and he tempted Sterling to go for the sweep, to go for the sort of slog sweep. He hit one, I think, but then he missed one and got LBW. And other batters who came in after that, Stokes was keen to... He moved himself into a sort of mid-off position, almost in a catching position at short of short, extra cover, with no one behind him, to tempt the likes of Camper to go over the top. And, you know, the challenge wasn't taken up, actually. But I really like the way he utilises Leach and encourages him to tease the batsman and tempt them into aggression, which may or may not bring about their downfall. But it's just much more enterprising cricket than Leach was induced to produce under Root.
Yeah, well, I my mind goes back to Melbourne, where Jack Leach bowled after lunch on one of the days when England were sort of in the game and the field was back, and it was easy for Australia just to knock the ball around. And, it, you know, there was no pressure whatsoever, and it was so easy for the Australians. Of course, they went on to win that match, and they went on to win the Ashes. Jack Leach's three wickets today all came from attacking shots, two sweeps, and then that dismissal of Camper, which I was talking about earlier, where he came down the pitch and tried to hoik him over long on and missed it and was bowled when he didn't have, you know, that much confidence in those who were at the other end. So there we go, Yoz. The first day of the test match summer is over. Decent weather in the end, a little bit chilly at the start, decent weather and a good crowd in, around about 25,000 tickets sold for the first 3 days of the test match. Not sure you're going to need a ticket for Sunday. We'll see how things play out. Anything more to say about your socialising today? Well, I saw you, Mike Gatting and John Embry, yeah, two of your old teammates.
Yeah, they were just telling me that I looked slovenly, as usual. And I sort of really, I mean, Embry always looks immaculate. Mike Gatting, you know, he used to ban jeans in the dressing room because, you know, he didn't like jeans. But we used to think it was probably because he couldn't get any to fit him. You know, there's a lot of piss taking always goes on with old colleagues in dressing rooms. It was nice to see them both, actually. We had quite a long chat with Manoj Badali, who, of course, has made a few headlines as the Rajasthan Royals owner, talking about the future of Test cricket. But it was good to see him there today, hosting in his box, first day of Test cricket. He'll be here at Lords all summer, you know, hosting a few people, trying to encourage them to watch Test cricket. And he was saying, actually, interestingly, you know, we were discussing the future of Test cricket and how we can induce the IPL owners to be more sympathetic and perhaps try and help the world game find suitable windows for the different formats of the game. And of course, he said, well, one of the things is, you know, I love Test cricket and I want to support it as much as I can, but some of the owners of the IPL teams are new and have less interest in that. And they're not a collaborative force, actually, the IPL owners. It's time they were, I think, because it would help the world game. And he knows that. And so I can see something happening, actually, in the next couple of months, because we had in the box there, we had Mike Gatting, who is chairman of the World MCC World Cricket Committee, which is a very influential body with very key, important people on it, like Sourav Ganguly, like Kumar Sangakkara, who's going to take over as the new chairman of MCC World Cricket Committee. And also Rahul Dravid, is it someone else who can be an influence on that as well? And we said we had him, we had Manoj Badali, and we also had Mark Nicholas, who is going to be the new president of the MCC to take over from Stephen Fry in October. And between them, I think they have a plan to really help the world game get to grips with the appalling scheduling situation.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens. And we'll see what happens tomorrow at Lords. But at the moment, you'd say this the game is moving towards a rather sort of inevitable, predictable, but potentially very entertaining conclusion with the way England have batted, scoring at 7 runs per over, without even baz-balling it, really, on the first day of this Test match. So England in control, 20 runs behind. We'll be back tomorrow around about this time to review the second day's play. Sleep well, Yoz, after your day of socialising.
Thanks, Simon, and thanks for listening, everyone. And by the way, for your listening pleasure, I hope you've checked out our sister podcast, Storylines, with Melissa Story and Nikki Chowdhury. Particularly interesting third episode came out last night with an interview with the former professional player Thea Brooks, talking about, in very candid terms, her struggles after leaving the professional game and losing her contract. A fascinating study of the sorts of things that women cricketers are having to face now that they're in a fully professional era. So check out that Storylines podcast on this feed, and speak to you tomorrow.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.